Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 142 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Baumhoffer. How you doing tonight, Ben?
Yeah, sure. Whatever. You're my good Veronica. What can I say?
Yeah.
We're doing good. It's a new
day. Starting off strong.
It's Monday and it's been a long week already. So, I mean, it's just going to be better from here.
This Monday has been a long week.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Glad we made it through the intro.
Exactly. I mean, the rest of the show, I mean, who the heck knows what's going to happen there? So, I'm not holding my breath, but we'll see what happens.
Oh boy. Okay, cool. Well, let's glad both Betty and Veronica are doing fantastic tonight. Mm-hmm. Let's jump into the news.
Yeah.
We got a lot of really fun stuff to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about some of the new news, some new D&D Beyond features. We're going to talk about initiative. It'll be super fun. So let's start off with a recent interview with the Wizards of the Coast head honcho. So this was basically an interview with Wizards of the Coast president John Haidt on GameIndustry.biz, basically talking about the gaming company. And a lot of the interview is spent on Wizards' digital gaming ambitions, but he did speak to about the realignment of the company to a franchise model. So this is really kind of interesting because apparently now, under the franchise model, all D&D related operations are running through one person. So this is Dan Ayoub. I think that's how I say his last name. If not, sorry, Dan.
It's going to be how we're saying it for now.
Yes. So Dan is the fairly new guy. You may remember him. He wrote the kind of the blog post about where D&D was going, talked, you know, about maps being free, about doing the creator focused kind of community council type thing. So basically, instead of everything being disparate, all the different arms, entertainment, video games, tabletop are now going through him. And so in the interview, John, the Wizards president, was talking about how the franchise model would allow for better coordination between different aspects of the franchise. And he talked about the D&D movie, for example, which had relatively limited crossover with the tabletop game, or, you know, Stranger Things. There always are little tie-ins, but there wasn't a whole lot. So one of the big things they talked about is trying to unify that so that they can have better coverage, I guess, of D&D as a whole and have the products relate to each other a little more, which honestly, this is probably a good thing overall, to have most of like the creative stuff being more connected to each other and not have a bunch of disparate arms that are kind of talking, but are also kind of siloed from each other. So, I mean, I'm liking what I'm seeing and hearing so far from Dan, who's, kind of is the head of the D&D franchise group now. There seems to be more stuff happening. Again, maps, I believe, is either free now or will be free in the next few days. This is very soon. Because it was mid-September last I remember. So that's really exciting. The new starter set is about to launch, which looks honestly very good. Even if it is a little pricey for a starter set, it does have a lot of stuff with it and should be pretty decent. The early reviews I've been reading have been fairly positive in having like all the stuff, being able to have the physical stuff, the player cards, that have all your class information easily accessible. So I think it's a great start. Obviously, seeing is believing.
Yeah.
In this case, and Wizards has a lot to show But it does seem like they really are trying to make up for some of the missteps that have happened over the last several years, which is a good thing because they did lose a lot of player, you know, trust in some of the poor decisions they have made over the last little bit. So I'm happy to see stuff moving in what seems to be a positive direction.
Yeah. And I mean, it's one of those things where if you have someone in a position like this, like this is from my assumption anyway, not exactly like a Kevin Feige or a Dave Filoni of like, you know, Marvel or like Star Wars, you know, overseeing everything creatively. But this is more of like being able to really kind of tie everything into it, seeing where opportunities lie to kind of further the brand and everything, as opposed to, well, I think that we should do something in Neverwinter next, you know, like it's not going to be something like that. But, you know, like the article says, kind of, you know, tying it together so that, again, like Stranger Things is, you know, one of the many reasons why D&D kind of blew up. Having something tied to it totally makes sense. And, you know, this is where you get more opportunities with that. Of course, I totally agree that it was crazy to me that the D&D movie did absolutely nothing with D&D except for like, here are like three items that you can get on D&D.
It had some items and like the character sheets.
Yeah.
For a few of them. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, as opposed to like, you know, here's like a an augmented like campaign setting of Baldur's Gate or something, or maybe the Underdark dungeon where was the Tharmachud or whatever it is, you know, it, like something released with that so that you can like play that adventure or something, or in the very least figure out how to get across that bridge with all the math and alternating steps and stuff like that. you know, that could be something fun, but. I like the fact that someone's in that position to really kind of, you know, integrate a lot of things together. And does this mean that I think that we're going to start seeing like D&D stuff in Fortnite? Probably not, which I'm kind of happy about. But it's, you know, it's the idea of just really kind of playing to their strengths and, you know, branching out to, you know, kind of hit different audiences, which is something that, you know, D&D and just TTRPGs in general are good for, is the fact that there's so many different types of players and who want to have like different types of stories and games and everything, that bring someone from one thing to another is just, you know, the best way to grow the brand as well as the game, and to just, you know, again, raise up everything that's falling underneath that umbrella.
I don't know, Ben. Fortnite is where all the kids are.
Yeah.
It is funny because Fortnite is kind of like the everything game.
Oh, now. That's exactly like, what it is.
Yeah. So I honestly don't. I think from a visibility standpoint, it actually probably would be a good idea, though I don't know how I feel about it.
Oh, I mean, there's Stranger Things stuff in there, so technically they've already kind of got their foot in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, there's something called the Demogorgon that you can play as, you know, it's your skin. Of course, it also runs around with a gun and stuff, which is real wild, but, you know.
It is weird. One thing that I did like in the actual interview link is he talks about his aim is to ensure that the digital and physical sides of the business are fully integrated, and anticipates that more gamers will return to in-person play. Unfortunately, because of COVID, there's a whole generation of gamers that has spent a good deal of time playing online only, and they're rediscovering the joys of being able to play together. What I want is to be able to have players move fairly seamlessly between in-person play and online play. Which I like. I love that the focus is still try and get people together at a table.
Yeah.
Because honestly, I have played a lot of in-person and a lot of online D&D. And while online D&D can be very good, and you can have a lot of fun, and it enables you to play with people that you normally couldn't play with, there is just something about in-person play that online play cannot replicate. And if you are able to, that is certainly my preferred method of playing. You know, not that online play is bad.
I was going to say, you better not disparage it, because that's the only way I can play. Because
yeah, exactly. Out of
state, so it's
yeah. Sometimes it's the only way you can play. My Curse of Strahd game that I play in, and I played in for 2+ years. It's all online, except for one session where we got to all get together and play all day, which was really, really fun. But again, like that just shows the power of in-person play. Mm-hmm. So I love that they're trying to make it seamless going between both.
Yes, I agree. I think just, you know, being able to just, okay, well, this week we have to play online because Joey's out of town at a conference or something. But this week we're able to get together, but next week we can't because Tiffany is going to be, you know, house sitting for her parents or, you know, something like that. You know, it's one of those things where being able to just completely have all the options again just makes it a lot more cohesive of, you know, storytelling, but much more so just easier and better for everybody as a whole.
Yeah. And to that end, that really leads into the next thing. The first like new feature of D&D Beyond Maps in quite some time. They actually just announced a few days ago, there is a new party inventory.
Yes. Now.
So if you are a part of a campaign, there is a brand new tab in your character sheet called Party Inventory, where you can put items in that the entire party can access and or equip, depending on, you know, what type of item it is. And they even have a place where you can put gold or money in there too, so that you can have a shared fund that everyone can see and access. So this is actually it sounds small, but this is actually a super awesome thing, because almost every campaign there is some sort of party inventory, and many times there is a party fund that maybe one person keeps track of or whatever. Now you'll have a place you can do it to where everybody can see it, and you can throw all the stuff that you might not be using at the time, or, you know, the any of the extra stuff you find that someone else could then grab later. It's a very nice feature. It's been one of those things on the wish list for a while, and it's really cool to see them finally get that in, because it is a very handy thing.
Oh yeah. And hey, look, as a DM, I am super happy about this, because hey, guess what? You found a whole bunch of loot. Boom. Just throw it right in the party inventory. Then the players can, you know, kind of sort through, see everything that's in there.
Yes.
And then take and move, you know, into their own bags if they need to. Or like say, you know, let's keep all of our potions in one spot so we know kind of where they are, or how many we have. You know, it's something that you can do that way. You can use it so that you don't have to worry about, you know, who has the big party MacGuffin. You know, like, let's say again, Tiffany's unable to play and we have to play without her. She's the one who's holding the crystal of Rabadoo, and we need that, but we don't know what the stats are on that. And the DM handed it or gave it to her and is like me and doesn't remember every single thing that he gives his players. So yeah, it's, you know,
yep.
A really great tool just for the DM to have, especially like when you're done looting with a fight. It's fantastic. Or if they want to pool their money in to get something, everybody can like contribute a certain amount. If you have things that everybody just wants to say, hey, let's just go sell this, split the cash and stuff like that. That's one way to do it. I mean, it's a really neat way to, you know, handle that inventory issue that's a lot of players you just kind of come across. So, I mean, great addition. I am super happy that this happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Big update. So if you play on D&D Beyond or you got a campaign on there, go ahead, check it out now. It's live if you want to use it.
Exactly.
Also coming from the official D&D channel, we have Mega Dungeon Descent, short-ish hour, 20 minutes or so, live play of the new Abomination Vault's 5e conversion from Pathfinder. So they are playing a portion of the Abomination Vault. It's got several wonderful people. B. Dave, I haven't gotten to see him in some actual plays for a while, so good to see him back at the in the saddle for that. And it is on the D&D Beyond channel. So if you want to check out, if live plays are your thing, just love watching those things. Especially if you're looking to see like what kind of the Pathfinder conversion of the Abomination Vaults kind of looks like. We'll have the link to that in the show notes. Definitely check that out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, go ahead.
Oh, just saying, last but not least, something dropped today.
Today. Yeah. So this is, since this is actually dropping tomorrow, because we're a day late, because, you know, life. Your wonderful Critical Role folks are eating well today because they dropped the character art for all 13 characters. It still sounds ridiculous. Good luck, Brennan. My God, he has a lot of his work cut out for him. But all 13 characters, they dropped the art for and who is going to play them. And as, you know, to Critical Role, it's an eclectic and hot bunch.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And I mean, the neat thing about this is we have the character names and we don't know what they're playing yet, which is kind of fun. So before we started recording, we kind of looked at everything and just kind of had ideas. And I mean, who knows how close we're going to be. I think that the only one that we're both like 100% on, and I mean, we could be wrong, but I really feel like Alexander Ward's character, Octus Taconis, something like that. We have a feeling that they are an artificer. Aside from that, I don't know if we're 100% on any of the other ones. Like we have good feelings on them. Like Marisha Ray, we think that Murray Magnuson is probably a bard, but
probably bard.
Not 100%.
I think Travis's TR Pride Sire is probably a Leonin Paladin.
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure on that one. I'm fairly sure Laura's is some kind of rogue, like pixie rogue.
Yeah, which the art on her is amazing. And the fact that she's got like a button just shows you the actual scale. Like someone's actually playing a tiny character, which,
yeah, I
mean, not a small character like a goblin or a, you know, halfling, a tiny character. She is again a pixie. And it
good
is
luck, Brennan.
Great. Well, I mean, her good movement luck speed's got to be horrible too.
Oh my gosh. But yeah, we'll have the link to that in the show notes. Check them out. I'm sure they'll reveal the classes here pretty soon, but that starts October 2nd.
Yep, October 2nd, 7 p.m. Pacific.
So we're only a little over 2 weeks away.
Yeah,
from campaign 4 starting. So that's exciting.
I know it has absolutely nothing to do with campaign 4, but I am working on trying to get through and finish campaign 3 before 4 starts. Just because when 2 started, I was in the middle of 1. And when 3 started, I think I was just finishing up 2. So I want to actually be completely caught up with everything before then. So I'm working on it. I'm on like episode 97 now. So I'm pretty close.
I am not, because this takes place in a completely different world and I don't have to be caught up.
Yeah. No, and that's the best thing is that it does.
I think that'll be really good to try and get new people on board for, like, you don't have to have 3 campaigns worth of lore. Oh, yeah. and investment and such. It's going to be brand new world, brand new characters, brand new DM. So it'll be a wonderful, I think, actual like D&D actual play entry point for anybody who wants to get started or wants to, you know, watch something like that in a longer form. Because if you're just starting out and wanted like a good actual play, I would probably recommend Dimension 20.
Yeah.
Because it's much more edited, concise, hour and a half to two-ish hour episodes, 20, 24 episodes in a season max on the longest ones. Much more
bite-sized.
Much more get bite-sized, get into a bowl.
Not even bite-sized. For consumption. But yeah.
Yeah. It's not one-shots, but yeah.
You're looking at like an appetizer, a meal, and maybe a dessert for those episodes. Whereas with Critical Role, you're looking at a full seven-course meal for every episode.
Yeah. Yeah, because they do have some seasons that are only like four episodes,
mm-hmm.
which were great. And then the long ones, usually the Intrepid Hero ones, are like 20-some. So yeah, that's what I would recommend. But if you're wanting to hop on the Critical Role train specifically and wanting to get into the longer form stuff, this is definitely going to be a great entry point for that, because you don't have to have researched or watched anything else.
Yeah. That being said, I will say that campaign 3 of Critical Role was a little bit of a rocky start for me, but then it got real good pretty fast. And now I'm going through sections where, having experienced campaigns 1 and 2, just accents and adds a ton more to the story. So yeah, breaking away and doing something brand new for 4, I think is definitely the best way that they could possibly go for that.
Yeah, I agree. Although I am very excited for the animated show, because the campaign 2 animated show starts in like a month and a half ish.
Oh yeah,
2 months.
Real soon.
Or so, yeah, like early mid November, I believe. The campaign 2 is coming out, because I was reading a little article about that one earlier. Apparently, these are going to be closer to hour long episodes versus the 20 to 30 minutes of Vox Machina. So that's going to be interesting too, because they were talking about going for longer form storytelling in the animated show, because the characters and character arcs are much deeper.
Yeah.
And there's a lot more to it, because they're going to apparently show the other, you know, bad guy, Essek, all that type of stuff. They're going to show that, where you didn't really get to know about that in the actual campaign. You just kind of heard about it, which is one of the cool things you can do in the animation media versus Matt, like, narrating to himself for an hour about what's going on the other side of the world with only the characters that he plays. So that'll be really, really fun as well.
Yep. And that said, it is different type of media, so don't expect it to be exactly like what happened in campaign 2. Just like the Legend of Vox Machina is not exactly what happened in campaign 1. And the changes that they've made really accentuate the fact that it's an animated feature as opposed to a live play game. And I love what they've done with it.
Yeah. Yeah. You got it. It's not all mediums fit. It's just like book adaptations, right?
Oh, yeah.
A good book adaptation will be true to the story, but will not necessarily copy it beat for beat, because sometimes that just doesn't work. It just doesn't translate well. One of the big things about books, and this kind of just going into D&D games too, a lot of books have inner monologue.
Oh yeah.
And you can't really translate that well to a screen or like the visual medium, or honestly, even a D&D game, right? That's like something that written, like the written word kind of has over most other forms of media. And so you show it in other ways, or you have to, kind of like hint at it, or you have to put the character in situations where that comes out as a character moment. So I was kind of thinking about that earlier, and it is kind of interesting that there's some things you can do with books you just really can't do with any other media, which is why I love consuming all different sorts of media, and why you should consume all different sorts of media, especially if you're running a game or even playing in a game and want to get your ideas. They're very unique, all the different sources of media. Consume them all. Learn cool stuff.
Yeah. It's funny
steal the cool stuff.
Because like adapting a book, like you're saying, is really tough, but that's one of the reasons why the best story adaptation of Les Miserables is a musical, because you're able to get all that depth just from someone just stepping aside and singing a verse. So it totally works.
Yeah. You're kind of almost singing the inner monologue. Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good that way.
Yeah. Very, very cool. All right. Well, let's hop into our main discussion of the night, which is initiative.
Okay.
What is initiative?
Who's going first on this? You or me? We've got to figure out some sort of way to determine this.
Let's roll.
Okay.
I have a six-sided dice here with a keychain.
I don't. With a keychain on it. Oh, that's definitely going to roll very well.
It rolled a one.
Oh, you know what? I have nothing to roll, so mine's zero. So I guess that
means it's okay. I have a plus five.
Oh, okay, that works.
It's all good. so obviously, initiative is the thing that is normally used for combat. Usually, a player will roll a d20 and then add some sort of modifier that they have, and or feat that they might have, and then that will determine the order that you go in combat. While mostly used for combat, you can also use initiative for other things. I have used initiative before for social type situations, or potentially situations where you need to slow down time to that roughly, 6 second per round type thing. If maybe a calamity or a disaster of some sort is happening and you need to slow it down because things need to be determined in a turn by turn basis. And so initiative can be really useful for those types of situations, because initiative is all about the
putting order to chaos.
Yeah. How your character is reacting, like how quickly you are reacting to a certain situation, right? And so having initiative for even those types of non-combat things can be really good, because then you can allow characters to act. Maybe XYZ happens, bridge breaks, boulder rolls down, fire starts or spreads, that type of thing. So initiative can be used in many different ways. One of the biggest things, especially in D&D, about initiative is that it is a turn-by-turn basis. Mm-hmm. There are other systems that run initiative differently. Some systems have no initiative at all. Some systems have mechanics built in to allow much more, I guess I would call it, interruption of initiative by other players or other NPCs or monsters. D&D is, for the most part, though, very turn-based, where it is Ben's turn, then it is the monster's turn, then it is Ryan's turn, then two more monsters go, then it's back to Ben. And so one of the things I wanted to talk about was ways to make sure that from an initiative perspective, you can keep players engaged. And you can keep things rolling quickly to make sure you lessen that downtime that just is inherently built in to the way that D&D does initiative. So Ben, when you run a combat or a scenario that uses initiative, what do you usually try and do to keep things moving at a decent pace?
Well, it does, a couple factors kind of apply to it. Like, how many monsters are there? Are there groups? What is kind of the goal of the initiative? Is it actually combat? Just different things like that. For the most part, I do just a pretty traditional initiative of, everybody roll. I put it in order. I roll for the monsters, put them in order. Just kind of go that way. But if there's something where it's like, say there's they're fighting one of the big bad evil guys, or you know, like a boss monster or something like that, and there's minions, I'll put all the minions on one turn because they're not the ones that actually matter. And also that makes it so that I'm not as cruel of throwing legendary actions after their turns. So, you know, less opportunity for me to do that. And of course I will forget to use legendary actions because that's what I do. But, you know, just having like, say, instead of, okay, I'm rolling in for 6 skeletons, which are going peppered throughout the entire experience, this is when the skeletons go on this turn. So, you know, whether it's I actually roll for attacks on each one, maybe not, because, again, depending on what kind of the goal is, how high level my characters are, you know, are these, you know, what is a quarter CR skeletons actually going to hurt my level 17 characters? Maybe, maybe not, you know, depending on who they're attacking. Like if I have them because they're skeletons and they're dumb, they're going up against my paladin who I know has a 20 AC, I'm not even going to roll because they're not going to do it. They're just going to run up and kind of harry. You know, I might do a roll, and if I get a nat 20, great. Otherwise, I know it's just not even worth it. If they're going up against my sorcerer who has an AC of, you know, like 12, yeah, I'm going to be actually rolling to see if something matters, you know. Stupid skeletons aren't going to be, you know, very picky on their actual attacks. When I'm going through with something that's kind of, you know, smarter and stuff, that's when I start, you know, kind of looking at initiative and trying to be more strategic with that sort of stuff. So that's when I'm going to be kind of more in tune to what they're doing and taking a little bit more time with the monsters and everything, just because, again, it's, you know, what they're fighting, and it's kind of plays a part into all that. Big bad evil guy, of course, I'll take as much time as I need for him to go to do the most damage or be the evilest I can or something like that. As for actually running through, like, say, a combat scenario or something, now that I'm using, you know, the D&D Beyond maps, it's great. It has an initiative tracker up top, which is awesome, so that everybody kind of knows where they are in order. But I'm still going to kind of call out. It's like, okay, so-and-so, it's your turn. The other person, you're next, or you're going to be after the monster or something like that, kind of to keep things rolling, keep everybody's like kind of focus back in on what happens so that they're ready to go when it's their turn. Like one of the hardest things about initiative, especially in combat, is when someone is, you know, not fully invested, not fully paying attention. And then all of a sudden it's their turn and like, Oh, the entire battle changed. I have to figure this out. Granted, for casters, sometimes the turn before you can completely change your plan, so that's understandable. But, you know, it's one of those things where having everybody kind of focus in and see what's going on really helps. Aside from that, I mean, it's kind of traditional. I don't do anything really fancy other than, you know, try to keep everybody, you know, on the path. Everybody knows who's next, what's going on. And, again, when I'm doing my stuff, I try to constantly have an idea of what I want to do and where it's going.
Yeah, that's great. I think the one of the biggest things you touched on is just making sure players know their order, right? Making sure you call out, hey, you're on deck. Hey, you're coming next, to kind of, especially if you have a large party or you're fighting a big group of, kind of snap people back in, because sometimes turns can take a while, and that's fine. That's fine. One thing you can also do, make sure if a person's having trouble figuring out what to do, check in with them, right? What are you thinking about doing? Like, are you having trouble deciding what to do? Give me some ideas. Maybe I can help, type thing. Because remember, as a DM, you are there to help the players. You really are. You're there to help everybody have a good time. Right. And some people just get analysis paralysis.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Some people just have a hard time making decisions. It is okay if you, as the DM, ask if they want help. It really is. Because remember, as the DM, you are rooting for the players. You want them to win. The monsters you are playing do not, but you have to set, but it's a separate thing.
Yeah.
And, something, you have to separate yourself from that.
And just, I have to throw this in here just to make sure that we're all on the same page. Cause I know you don't mean this. It doesn't mean playing their character for them. Yeah.
That's why you should ask.
Yeah.
That's why you should ask.
And even then, give them a couple options so that you can at least narrow it down so that it's not just
what I like to do is I like to ask them, what would you like to do? Instead of asking them a specific mechanical thing.
Ooh, that's good.
Ask them what they would like to do. And then a lot of times, and not every DM does this, and not every DM has to do this. I do this especially with newer players. So like recently while I was running teaching, doing that two shot I did recently teaching people, sometimes newer players just don't know what to do, right? Or they don't know their characters super well. And that's fine. That's expected. Mm-hmm. Especially when we're doing like a newer players or a shorter like two shot or something like that. And if it's like, if I'm running in D&D Beyond, I'll have all the characters pulled up so I can quick reference in different tabs to see what they're doing, or on like a Chromebook or an iPad or a laptop or something like that. I'll have pulled up on different tabs. And so there's a few times there's just like, I'm not sure what to do. I mean, he'd kind of look in and see, I was just like, what do you want to do? What do you want to do? Like, I want to try and swing and do this thing and attack this guy. And I'm like, that's awesome. We can do that. So what you would then do is you would roll an acrobatics check. You would look under your attack actions, and you've got this this attack with your daggers, and it does this vex property with the weapon mastery. And then so you'll roll for that. And if you hit them, then you can roll those type of dice. And so a really good way to do that is just kind of help guide them along, but just figure out get an idea of what they want to do, and then help them work that out mechanically.
Yeah. That abstract kind of, you know, ask of that works really well to kind of, again, narrow it down and really help them kind of focus in and teach them, you know, what those options are. Like the option might be, I want to stop that guy from running away. Okay, well, your options are run after him. I see you've got a longbow. You can vex him and make him slower. You can try to shoot him and do that. Or, you know, something along those lines. Or misty step in front of him and punch him in the face. You know, whatever. You have a multitude of options just based on just the very simple, what do you want to do? That grind, that is a great advice on that.
And, I mean, one other thing, too, and this goes for Theater of the Mind, but also it can go for maps and stuff, because there's very few maps you make where you can represent everything that exists on a battlefield, in a room, whatever. So if someone's having trouble, maybe taking time up because they can't figure out what to do or whatever, you can sometimes spark creativity by describing the environment. Real quick. Well, right now you're surrounded by trees. There's a bunch of rocks over there. There's some shrubs that you could potentially go hide in if that's what you wanted to do. Looks like there's a branch that you might be able to break off. It looks like they're near a cliff. That ground could give way potentially. It's looking rather shaky. Or you could try and knock them off. There's a bunch of different things you can do. Describe the environment to help spark ideas for your players.
Yeah. And while that's happening, everybody who's following an initiative also gets that information. So that's going to help their turn coming forward as well.
Yep. For sure. One thing that I started doing recently, and this is a homebrew. One of the things I like to do in my games, if I see something where there is friction, we did this for a long time. Like a good example would be drinking a potion as a bonus action. That wasn't a thing for real for a long time. But I noticed it caused friction because using your entire action just to drink a potion feels bad.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels bad. And so long, long ago, before 5.5 made it a real thing, I have a small document for my homebrew world that I have just kind of a list of homebrew rules that I sometimes occasionally add to, that I, whenever I start a new campaign, I just explain to my players. I give them access to, you know, look at it and such, of rules and mechanics that over my, you know, 10-ish years now of playing D&D, I found had friction, or slowed things down, or were just not fun, right? And so my homebrew rule for that, for the longest time before it became official, was you can drink a potion as a bonus action. If you want to take the action to drink the potion, you can, and you just get full hit points
mm-hmm.
from that potion. And that's the bonus you get for, you know, using an entire action. But if you don't and want to still have an actual turn, you can use your bonus action. That's fine. Another thing I added a while ago is shoving as a bonus action. You know where I got that from?
Baldur's
Gate 3. It's a lot of fun. It makes for interesting situations. It makes the game a little more movement oriented. It gives another thing that you can do with your bonus action. If you don't have a lot of bonus action things to be able to do, it gives another tool in the toolkit, especially for melee people. But maybe sometimes you get lucky as a caster or something and just need to get somebody away from you. Bad guys can do it too. And it has been very successful and very fun. And my players have used it a ton and it works out. So what I normally do is anytime I think of a new homebrew rule or something like that, I basically come to the table and I go, here's this thing I'm thinking of doing. I want to beta test it for a few sessions and get feedback on it. And if you like it, we'll keep it. And if you don't, we'll either tweak it or forget about it. So in this case, excuse me, I've been playing some other systems and I liked the way a few of them did initiative. Cause I'm not a fan of the no initiative. Anyone can just kind of go whenever type thing. Mm-hmm. That's just not my style. You'd have to really have a table that can handle that if you're going to do something like that. So I wanted something that was a little more flexible, but still kept within the, it feels D&D. Cause I don't want people to miss out on any bonuses they get, any feats they might've taken that might've affect, you know, advantage on initiative or, you know, plus five to initiative or something like that.
Yeah, exactly.
So what I landed on was basically, let's have a situation. So player one and player two, a player run rolls an 18 or has an 18 initiative. Player two has a 17 initiative. Monster number one has a 15. Player number three has a 13. Player number four has 12. And then there's monster number two with a 7 and monster number three with a 6. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so the way I've been testing with my current group is that if you are in initiative together, where there's no monster in between. So in this case, player one and two are together and player three and four are together. The players can choose when they want to go within their group. So when it comes to their turn, player one or player two can go first and then the other can go second and they can choose that order every single round. Same with player three and four. They're together. They can choose which one of them wants to go first per round.
Okay. Yeah, kind of makes sense.
Monsters can do this too. So I have a little more flexibility with the monsters. So monster two and three, if I want one of them to go for the other, they can do that. If the players kill monster number one, who is between the two sets of them. They get to merge back up, and all four of them can decide the order they want to go in.
Okay, that makes sense. I mean, it gives them a chance to kind of, you know, talk strategy and stuff like that. I know that there are some DMs out there who don't like, you know, strategy talked above board, but I mean, this is, you know, in a lot of cases it's helpful, and it's all based on your DM strategy or, you know, the style and stuff like that. But this is kind of cool because it gives you a sense of that dynamic without, you know, having the mass chaos of, okay, everybody, let's just, you know, roll the dice and see what happens. Well, obviously rolling the dice would mean initiative order, but you know what I mean? Where it's the entire combat round is just a muddle of, Joey said he wants to go first and then Bob, but I want my monster to go. And so this, you at least have order and set parameters to it.
Yeah. So you still have the structure around it, but you're giving yourself and the players more flexibility to play. Mm-hmm. So one of the cool things that has come from this, so like take a combat we did recently. One of the players was down. Let's say in this first group of two, one of the players was down. They were first. Normally, on their turn, they would have just had to roll a death save. Succeed or fail, that's their turn. Boom, yeah. They're done. They had no turn. But because of this rule, the other person was able to go first, heal them, get them back up, do something, and then that person was able to have their full turn. And that to me was like kind of the light bulb of, oh, this actually works the way I was hoping it would work. Mm-hmm. Because players are now talking about combos. The players are now talking about, hey, I have this thing. Can you go first so you can get them in position for this? Or, hey, can you go first so you can get out of the way so that I can do a fireball or something like that so you don't get hit, right? Mm-hmm. And so, yes, in some ways, this makes the players a little more powerful because they can plan. They might be able to combo a little bit. Not like there aren't any really many, if any, actual like combo mechanics in D&D like there are in other games, but it does give that feel a little bit to where the players can then kind of try and plan things. And it also allows them to kind of know, okay, if we take this monster down, we might be able to, you and me can get together. Or the whole group will be back together. And that kind of gives them a little bit of strategy too, if that's the direction they want to go. But then on the DM side, you also get that flexibility because it might be that monster number three really should go before monster number two, because otherwise your turn might be wasted or he might not be able to do as much. So in that way, it balances out somewhat the player power as well, especially if you have multiple monsters you're running. So like I said, so far, only done it for a few combats. The feedback has been very positive, and so I'm keeping it in for now. And if it keeps going well over the next several sessions, I will probably adopt that into my homebrew rules that we do. So I wanted to kind of throw that out there. So if anyone thought that sounded interesting, they could try that out as well. Love to hear feedback from other groups. If it's fun, if it works well, like I said, I wanted to try and keep it within being feeling D&D, mm-hmm. but maybe offering a little bit more of that flexibility that you might get like in Draw Steel or in Daggerheart without just full on throwing away
any sort of order and semblance.
Yes.
I think it's an awesome system. I don't know if I'm going to switch over to it or not. I'm going to have to think about it and talk to my players and stuff. There are a couple things that did come out as there would never be problems in your group because you know your group and how they work and everything. I just want to make sure that For people who are trying this, just have a couple things in the back of your mind as you're going through this. Do your best to make sure everybody's vocal about their turn so that it's not skipped. That is, you know, without like the strict order of this, then this, then this, then this, there's potential for that. So make sure people are able to voice if, you know, they didn't get a chance to go. That's very important.
And the DM should also be keeping track of this too.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely.
Right? Because as a DM, you know, the order. So make sure, make sure your players go if they go in a different order than the rolled order.
Yeah. And then secondly, again, your players don't seem to be people who would do this, but make sure that everybody's contributing equally and it's not someone just basically taking everybody else's character and using their abilities for themselves or something. So make sure everybody still has their own agency in this. You know, there are players out there who have main character syndrome who would grab this as a perfect opportunity of you're going to support me in my mission as opposed to working together for, you know, the betterment of the group. So in some cases you might not be able to do this, but overall it seems like it's a really fun, cool thing to do.
Yeah. I've been enjoying it so far. And like you said, it might not necessarily be for every group. Obviously as a DM, you will know your group best. Mm-hmm. But I definitely have found that it offers a little more flexibility. It's kept people a little more engaged because they're thinking about what their group can do versus necessarily just themselves. Mm-hmm. And they actually have the power to do that now because you can mix it up from turn to turn versus, I'm limited by what I can do because I always go before him or her or them. Yeah. Right. So it's certainly a big thing to think about. And so far, at least, I found it's led to more strategizing and some cooler plays than might have been available without it. Mm-hmm. So yeah. Wanted to throw that out there during our initiative discussion because it is something I have been trying and something I've found has been very fun.
Yeah, sounds like it's working really. It's working out really well for you, Veronica, and I think that's.
Thanks, Betty.
I think that's something that. Yeah, anytime I stumble now, I'm just remembering my name is Betty.
Yep.
But no, it sounds like it's working out really well for you, and it sounds like a lot of fun. It's something that, I don't think I want to bring in mid campaign, but possibly on the next in my next campaign. I've already
give it a try. Yeah, give it a try. Throw it in as a beta rule. That's usually the best type of thing I've found whenever I homebrew something is I'll come to my group and be like, hey, I want to try this out. Let's try it out for a few sessions. And if we don't like it, it's gone.
Yeah.
Right. And if you do, let's do it.
I'm just looking at the dynamic and I think a new setting and session with new rules is the way to go for my group.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great time to introduce new rules. Mm-hmm,
definitely.
You can do it right from the start. You can kind of list it out. Make a document.
Yeah, that's when I'm going to switch
my
crit rule and everything so that it's a, you know, one die is max and then you roll for more and stuff.
Yes. I've been using that one for quite a while and it does feel so much better.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
It really does. I know we've talked some about homebrew, but it's been a while. We'll have to go through that again sometime because there's probably a lot more that we've done or think about since the last time we talked about that.
I don't know if I do a ton though, especially since some of the stuff has turned into like actual rules now. So
I was going to say,
I'm running officially less homebrew than I did before.
There was a lot of homebrew stuff that did become legitimate.
Yeah.
In 5.5.
Ah, crap. We need to think of
which
other
is good.
New things to break the game.
Oh, it's good. It's good. I'm glad that was one of the things I was hoping they would do. And they did adopt a lot of very popular homebrew stuff. So I like that.
Yeah.
I like definitely. That they were willing to listen and integrate some of those and smooth some of those friction points. Mm-hmm. Sure. But how about you guys? Do you have a weird initiative system, a different initiative system that you run? Let us know in the email or throw us up something on Discord. We would love to hear about that.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. As we kind of wrap things up, we always like to shout out a few cool things. One thing stumbled across, I think it was even posted in our Discord. Right now, the Humble Bundle is running a Dungeon Masters Guild top content from the D&D community book bundle. They have a like a $5 four item, a $15 11 item, and then a $25 19 item bundles that you can go grab. I will say, as of recording, by the time this is released, there's only going to be about 4 days left to grab this. So if you hear this, you might want, and that sounds interesting, you might want to get on it quickly. Just because of stuff. But I was looking through, especially the $25 19 item bundle. There is a lot of really good stuff. I actually own several of these that are very good, like Uncaged Volume 1, Home Field Advantage, which is like a layer compendium, some of Ann Gregerson's monster loot that adds more loot to different monsters from the things, Monster Manual Expanded, which is a really great extra monster book, Elminster's Candlekeep Companion, if you run Candlekeep. And then I know I've talked about it before, Uncaged Goddesses.
Mm-hmm.
Like that alone, in my opinion, is worth $25. That is the like high tier 4 one shots. There's like even pre-made characters and everything. Incredibly well done, especially if you're wanting to try some high level D&D. That is a phenomenal supplement. So,
and that
highly recommend.
Falls under the $5 bundle as well, like for 4 books.
I know. Wild.
So great.
It's so good. Deal. Yeah. So if you can only chip in a few bucks to get it. Yeah, even the lowest bundle will come with that book. That book is phenomenal. I have run one or two things from it already, and it is very good. Very well done supplement, so highly recommend. So we'll have the link to that on the show notes, dndiscussions.com. Check that out. And then there was there was just this, we'll have this on the show notes on dndiscussions.com too. There's this a fun little video that came up in my feed called Brendan Lee Mulligan gives life-changing D&D advice for 6 minutes.
He does.
It's just a really good listen. It's a really good listen. He talks about all sorts of things. He talks about this character, such how to quote unquote railroad your players with using a really great analogy about how water flows.
Good.
It's very good. Very good. So just a little 6 minute video. We'll have a link in the show notes, but highly recommend a watch as a DM. There's a lot of really good stuff in there. So definitely check that out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of our episode. But as always, before we go, we usually like to talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our game. So, Ben, did you get to play since the last time we chatted?
Oh, my gosh. No, we were supposed to play on Saturday, but unfortunately, someone was feeling rather unwell. So we ended up skipping it this week. So I hope in 2 weeks time we'll be able to do it, but we'll see. We're getting into a really busy season life-wise and work-wise and stuff. So it might be a little challenging, October, November, December. So, you know, we'll see how it goes. So hopefully we get a few more sessions in before the end of the year. That's my big hope, because there's so much going on in my game, and I want them to get to that conclusion, to get to level 20. 'Cause we're getting so close. There's 17 now.
Yeah, that's wild. I love it.
We started at level 3.
Oh, it's so cool.
Yeah. It's going to be great.
Love it. Absolutely.
Or was
it
five?
What a, what an incredible campaign.
Five or less, five to three, somewhere in there. I'm not sure, but it's
still a feat.
Yeah. It's been such a long running game and I've been enjoying so much of it that I'm really looking forward to the conclusion. Just, I mean, not because of like, I want it to end, but because there's this big thing coming and
yeah, it's the culmination of a story you've been telling for years.
Yeah.
Like that. That in and of itself is just so cool.
Yeah, since 2018. So seven years. Anyways, how about you? Did you get a chance to play?
I did. We actually played on the off week because we had people with events coming up. So we ended up playing 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, cool.
And then we're going to wait a few weeks and get back on our regular cadence. But we had a downtime session. After the crazy events of rescuing, going in and rescuing this artifact, the crazy monster fight, you know, one person being at stuck at 2 health as their max because of necrotic and damage that takes the health down. And then that person being rash and almost running into multiple traps as they're trying to steal information from like the offices and such of this place. And it's just like, oh dude, come on. You know, you realize that four damage kills you permanently. But I love it because he's playing his character and that's, I wouldn't have it any other way. But yeah, we did end up doing downtime session. And so usually what I do for my downtime sessions is I have the characters or all the players send me kind of just like a little, you know, it's like, hey, send me some bullet points of what you want your characters to do. I throw those in my DM notes. And then when we get together, I jump between bullets and between characters.
Yeah.
To make sure that everyone gets to play. No one has to wait too long. Sometimes, you know, the characters will team up and they'll both be two or three of them will be doing something at the same time that's related. And I love my downtime sessions because they usually end up being some of the best RP, because not all the bullet points are RP. Some of them are, you know, the little hand wave. I want to buy something. Some of them are just, I need to do something. And so we just do the back and forth of this character, will set you up with this and you work out the time and you pay some money and that sort of thing. Just kind of narrate a little bit back and forth with the player. But then sometimes, you know, we dive in and it's a full RP scene.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes it feels like the downtime sessions get some of the best RP scenes some of the characters. And I absolutely love it. One of the characters is starting on a bastion.
Ooh.
So we're going to try and dip our toes into the bastion system a little bit, kind of with, their shop and getting a workshop built, and stuff so they can do things. We dived into some of the characters' backstories. We dived into some of the politicking, a lot of some of the time was spent, you know, tailing people to try and figure out things that are going on. It was really, really great. Lots of really fun moments and a kind of big surprise at the end as they were investigating and searching. Finding out that all this tension that had been building between this mercenary faction that kind of owns a big chunk of one of the districts and the district guard, the call came in for the district guard to attack them. Ooh. Because the tensions had simmered and boiled over, but maybe the villains had something to do with that tension and such as well. And so finding out how the characters are going to react to that being the last, you know, little bit before we ended the session for the night. So I'm really, really excited to see what they end up doing next session. They were able to learn and gather quite a bit of information and such. So I've been absolutely loving this campaign. It's definitely been a little different than anything else I've run before. So I'm learning as we go as well, to how to run things better. We've been doing like the stars and wishes at the end of each session, which has been really good. It's one of those things. It's like, man, I wish I did this. I'd done this every campaign because getting the feedback is nice. Having people kind of be able to shout out character moments from other people that they've been doing stuff has been really good. So I'm very excited for the next session for sure.
Good. Sounds like things are going definitely not as planned, but
definitely not as planned,
but you know, going really well for you. I'm happy for you.
Things rarely do.
That's kind of rarely how it goes.
Do. Yep. You just adapt. But yeah, I'm excited. So happy to be back doing it after a hiatus. So I'm very, very happy. Looking forward to the next session. But with that, that will wrap up our show for this evening. Thank you so much, everyone, for listening. We really appreciate you coming and spending. You know, there's a lot of things you could be doing with what almost always ends up being about an hour. Yeah. So we appreciate that you spend that hour every other week with us. And if you'd like to know where you can get in touch with us or chat with us, Ben, why don't you tell everybody where we can be reached?
You bet. So we mentioned our Discord earlier. Guess what? We've got a Discord. I know, big surprise. The neat thing about that is that, you know, it's a great place for you to talk, ask questions of other players, other DMs, share your stories, you know, see fun little memes here and there, see homebrew stuff, you know, things like that. It's a great place to go. You can find a link to our Discord on dndiscussions.com. That's right, our website. For every post since we started having a Discord, there's been a link to it. So, you know, check it out, dndiscussions.com. You can actually find every single episode that we've ever done on that website as well as, you know, your podcast player of choice. But you can also find links to our social media accounts because we're on Blue Sky. If you're looking for the show, it's at dndiscussions. If you're looking at Ryan, he's at tbkzord. If you're looking at me, I'm at Ben Bumhofer. If you don't know how to spell any of that stuff, it's on the website. So definitely check that out. If you're sitting around thinking, gosh, I really wish I could hear these guys play some Dungeons & Dragons, well, you can listen to me. I'm on +5 to hits. I'm playing a barbarian and having a blast with it. So check out +5 to hits. Lots of fun. Newest episode was recorded, I think, last week. It was a shorter episode, so we're going to probably combine it with the next one, then put it out. I never know the schedule when that stuff's coming out. It's not 100% always at the same time. So, you know, just subscribe. It'll show up. This show, though, D&D Discussions, we try to be every other week. Sometimes we're not. Life happens. Hey, this is a hobby. We have fun. But you can always find that, again, on Discord, on our social media. We posted it out, let you know. And, of course, subscribe or go to dndiscussions.com. That being said, everybody, thank you very much for listening. And for all those people who do join us on Discord or go to dndiscussions.com, I can see how many times I can fit that in. We appreciate all your support. You know, we would probably do this without you just because I love talking about D&D with Ryan. But, you know, it's nice to know that you're getting some engagement with it and you know, enjoying the discussion is really what it kind of comes down to. So thank you for all your support. We love hearing from you. If you don't want to have anything that you say, you know, publicly out there on Discord or on Blue Sky or anything like that, you can always email us too at dndiscussions@gmail.com. You know, we got a whole DN Discussions theme going for, you know, with all of our channels. So check that out. But with that, Ryan, thank you very much for joining me this week, as always. And you know what? You can call me Betty anytime. I don't mind. But everybody else, roll high. And be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.